Welcome to season two of The Protectors. Thank you for joining me. Today I have a great guest, Gabby Reese. I've been following her for years. She's a great inspiration, especially to the community that we serve. I also have my special co-host, Alicia, is back. And yeah, let's get going. Let's talk. Gabby, welcome.
Thank you, Jason. Hi, Alicia.
Hi, hello.
It's great to have you on. Big fan. I actually ran into the airport back in 97, 98 in Hawaii. I was like, hey, that's Gabby Reese. I was like, that's funny. And man, you have had a lasting career and you've had numerous changes. It seems like you've had the rebrand as you got older. And that's one of the things I really wanted to have you on today. The protectors, the community we serve is the emergency responders, police, law enforcement, military, veterans, and those that support them. And right now we need positive messages. We need to know that we can rebrand. We can keep adapting to different situations. Mm-hmm. How do you keep doing that?
You know, it's funny. I had a kid. We have these experiences, my husband and I, that we do these like 2.5 day experiences. And we had some kids who played football at Clemson, and the kid had double knee surgeries. He was a senior. The team did very well, but he was done. He wasn't going to be going to the NFL. And he was probably one of those guys that was talented enough that had that possibility going, you know, while he was in college. And before he left the experience, I said, you know, you have to remember, when you have that much training and that much discipline and you can focus and work on goals and work on goals with other people and adapt and all these things, it is like being a loaded gun and you just have to decide where you want to shoot it, where you want to aim and shoot next. And I think when you're talking about the group that you're speaking to, these are talented people. These are people that have developed skill sets that a lot of people don't get to develop, be in environments that most of us don't get to be in, and work with others in situations that are so unique. And so whenever I talk to groups like this, it's like, what's calling you? You know, it isn't the obvious stuff. It isn't like, oh, I'm going to do the next most obvious thing. But I feel like it's when you're in what you're doing, you start to ask yourself, hey, I'm not going to do this forever. Who am I and who am I becoming? And what does that look like in 3 and 5 and 10 years? And start to have that inner dialogue. And plus, I feel like it's almost like active prayer where you kind of put it out in the world and then things start to show up. So I think it's not waiting till you're all the way through. And if you do, that's fine. But I think for me, it's been something where I'm not trying to repeat what I've done or who I supposedly have been, whatever that means. But sort of go, well, who am I now? And who am I also trying to become, and what does that look like?
I think that's so great. And I work with an organization called Bunker Labs, and we help military veterans and military spouses who are interested in entrepreneurship start their businesses. And one of the things I ask to really anyone and everyone, but I ask, what is your superpower? And I think, you know, veterans in this group that we're talking about have so many unique and essential and really wonderful skills that made them who they were in their careers. And when you're in the military or law enforcement, we're really trained. I mean, I don't think there's any group that has better leadership, but we're really trained in a way that gets us to fall in line. And to sometimes we feel like we lose our identity a little bit. And then when we make that transition into civilian life, we're sort of stuck in this place where we don't have people telling us what to do every day. Yeah. And we feel this immense amount of pressure because we served and we know we have to do something great, but we don't quite know what that next step is. And I think what you said about, you know, who am I, where do I want to point this loaded gun? What's next for me and what matters to me? What am I made of? I think these are super important questions to ask. And certainly, I think right now during this time of quarantine where we're all spending a lot of time with ourselves and our thoughts, I think it's really important to just take a look inside and really understand who we are and what we care about.
And I think your point about, you know, it's interesting. I have three kids and, you know, you get torn between, like, when you put your kids in, you know, school and institutional things, there's so many great, there's sort of things around that, which is like understanding the system and knowing how the system works and getting through the system. And you know what I mean? All of that. And when you talk about like law enforcement or military, these are structured systems. So I think it's a really powerful thing when you realize that it is good to be able to be part of something. And then it can be, and also for people to give themselves that room to go, hey, to be an entrepreneur, to do something a little bit more on your own, it's challenging anyway. But if you're coming from this other, where you're going for the greater good, and then saying, okay, I did that, but it's almost to give yourself a break during that transition, but also to know no matter who you are, even if you're completely like free thinking, out of the box person, the notion of being an entrepreneur, the notion of transitioning into other parts of our lives and careers, no matter who you are, is always challenging. So it's also for people to sort of give themselves a break during that process.
Yeah. And you mentioned that I was listening to a few of your podcast episodes, but this give yourself a break. And so for me, just like you, I'm a mother. I have two girls. I'm in a house full of women. They're very fierce and individuals. We're going through a lot of individual things like power struggles daily. And for me, you know, this is the first time in my life where I've been working from home, but now I'm working from home plus homeschooling. And it really felt like failure every single day at first. And I couldn't seem, and I'm still struggling to find this balance of, you know, do you have enough screen time? And you've been FaceTiming your friend all day, but then I feel guilt because you're not seeing your friends in real life. And then are you learning? And are you watching YouTube? My youngest, who's 5, you're watching YouTube while I'm on a work meeting. Is this okay? And it just really felt like failure every single day. And to hear you just saying like, it's okay, we have to give ourselves a break and show ourselves that empathy and grace. I'd even love to hear, you know, your thoughts and your advice on how we give ourselves a break during this time.
Well, especially during this time, I think it's like this, and you're talking to a group that, you know, it's about serving perspective, right? And so it's knowing what situation are we in and what is the appropriate way to respond in this situation. So it wouldn't be appropriate to respond like we're not in quarantine, because we are. And so I think, you know, I have to say that a lot of times, and you know, I've heard this many times, that, and it's natural that women are more prone to negative emotion, which just means like worry and, you know, a little bit of overanalysis from time to time, even though that's a very useful tool. And sometimes in a time like this, it would be about simplification. Like, we're safe. You know what? The kids, they're going to be okay. And I'm here and I'm loving them. And ultimately, you're a good example. And also the confidence of that. And I think the other thing that I have really been humbled about in parenting is I believe that we can do all these things that create a lot of opportunities, you know, for our children, but ultimately they're watching us. And I also think that we actually think we're a lot more in control of the outcome on them than maybe we really are. Like, they are also who they are. They're impacted by their generation. So I think if we're solid examples and then keep them in safe and good places and then provide as many opportunities as we can, they're still ultimately going to really sort of make their choices too, which is a very hard thing to accept as a parent.
Yeah, that's super the helpful. Truth. Yeah. My daughter is very well adapted. She is 10 and she is like the boss of the family right now. Well, my son will do his online school for about an hour and then he'll be like, I want to go play video games. Mm-hmm. But the thing when they play video games is they're actually talking to their friends, like they're real friends that they used to play with. So I don't have a problem with that. And even with these games they play, there are leadership aspects of it. And there's different things where it's just, I don't know, it's a different world now. It's crazy.
But your parents said that, and my parents said that, and their parents said that. And that's what I'm saying. It's like, they're going to be different than us because they have to navigate a different time. So actually, yes. It isn't for us to understand. It is us to pay attention, to learn from them, because times are changing. And I don't care how cutting edge you are, how cool, how hip you think you are. There comes a point as a parent where you're like, oh, wait, I don't understand what they're navigating. Their culture is different than my culture. And now with the addition of technology from like 2007, 2008, you're talking about a really different accelerated planet that I think right now we're in a heavy experimental time. And for all of us parents, I think we're sort of probably all holding on for dear life. And if we think we can really control it, I think we're going to miss real opportunities to learn from our children about how to support them on how they're going to have to navigate it.
Yeah.
That is the truth.
Go ahead, Jason.
Oh, go ahead, Alicia.
I was just going to say what you said about learning from our children and how to navigate it. I think that's so important and a constant reminder. My five-year-old is the best communicator and negotiator I know. She's really taught me a lot about communicating, but not too long ago, I said something to her and she said, you know, Mom, I really don't like it when you tell me no. And I was so taken back by this and actually laughed out loud for a second. And then rather than reacting, I said, okay, well, let's talk about this. Why don't you like it when I tell you no? And she said, when you tell me no, it makes me feel bad about myself and makes me feel like I don't have a say around here. And this is for my five-year-old. And so I had to really find my words here, because the answer isn't I'm bigger, I'm older, I'm stronger, I know more than you. And so I was like, well, what is the reason? And I said, you know, just from my experience, sometimes I tell you things because it's my responsibility to take care of you. And if I tell you no, it's likely because I need to make sure that you're okay. And she said, okay, well, I understand if you tell me no, but can you just tell me the reasons why you're saying no to me so that I understand? And it just completely blew my mind. But I respect that and I appreciate that. And I actually can relate with that 100% because I also don't like to be told no.
But no, nobody likes to be told what to do. It's like, who wants to be told? But I think there's something important also, even with that, because my youngest daughter, I have three daughters, is she's tough that way with negotiating. But also there does come a point, and you guys know this from being in the military, there's things you can't possibly understand until you've gone through the experience. And also you're talking about young minds developing. There's an interesting thing where they're not going to know or understand, even if we explain it to them, until they sort of gone through certain things. And it would be like, I don't know, forgive me for my lack of maybe saying this correctly, but let's say when you enlist, the person who takes you through your training, they're probably very clear about the systematic way. It's like a coach about what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to sit down and break it down to every single person that's there and go. And then when you get through it, you'll go, oh, I saw all the pieces came together. Or now I understand how it came together and makes sense. And so sometimes with kids, it's very interesting, because especially when they're clever and if they know that they can actually, I don't want to say manipulate you, but let's say manipulate you, because I can, believe it or not, I'm highly manipulative because I'm trying to be conscious, which sounds like total BS, right? I'm trying to consider, right, like everybody. And my girls subconsciously use that on a daily basis against me. And sometimes I have to be like, you won't understand. And I'll live with that. Because when you're trying to be so fair all the time, sometimes it's like I said, a good coach or a good leader or a good general is like, uh-huh, and this is how we're doing it. And that is a part of life. Like, that's like the cycle of life. Like, you know, teenagers must rebel and break away and have a different identity and be different then. And all of that is just, it's all part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I would love to hear your talk on, or your take on how you're communicating this time to your children. Certainly as we're learning how to navigate it ourselves, I know that's been one of my biggest challenges is, you know, my daughter on a Zoom call the other day, she said, I just wish coronavirus was over so we could all play together again. And, I would love to hear how you're explaining this as you're also learning how to navigate it yourself.
You know, it's different because my kids are a little older. My youngest is 12. So they have a sense of it. And I think what my husband and I are trying really hard to do is not to vibrate too much and just to be relaxed. I don't want to say relaxed, but stay as relaxed as possible so that we can impact them that way. There's more concessions, like you said, like I'm allowing a lot more computer time because that is how they're socializing with their friends. But I have no answers, if I can tell you. It's for me, as I'm not acting scared or wound up. And I'm always having the same conversation that I've had with them, which was, is the importance of self-care and health. Mm-hmm. Because in these situations, it's very evident why we need to be healthy. So I, you know, if anything, that reinforcement is coming through pretty loud and clear.
Yeah.
No, and that's the thing. It's really, it's a new world. I try to look back at history and I try to learn as much as I possibly can. And trying to adapt to this situation with the kids is, it's definitely different. I mean, you could be a warrior, you could be an athlete, you could be whatever, but still, when it comes to your kids, it's kind of like your little bubble and you want to keep them in their little bubble and not let them get harmed. One thing I did want to touch on was, I did a little research for, typically when I do a podcast, I don't do a lot of research because I don't want to know as much, but you've been in the public eye for a long time. And it always seems like you are on a quest for knowledge, that you always want to learn. And that is one of the things that I really look up to you for. Now you're doing a podcast, and I'm pretty selfish when it comes to podcasting, because to me, it's almost like a therapy session. Like every time I have a guest on, like today, I'll learn something new. And I love interviewing people. I love hearing different stories and different perspectives, and not just the common, where were you born type questions. Is that the reason you jumped into the podcast arena?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an extension. You know, I've been interviewing people since 1992.
Yeah,
I started, you know, kind of as, I don't want to say, it was completely on a lark. I used to do MTV Sports and interview athletes, and that made a lot of sense for me because I was so interested in how do they prepare, what's their psychology, learn more about their sport. It was fascinating for me as an athlete. And then it would, you know, I moved on. I did network and I did other things, which there's a formality to it, which is cool, but there's some limitations, whether it's time or what really people want to talk about. And actually, that's how I met my husband in 95. I interviewed him for a TV show. So I've always enjoyed speaking with people because, to your point, you learn a lot. And I think there's something really healthy, at least there was for me, when there was a part of my job that was public and also all about me all the time. And so when you're interviewing other people, it's about them. It's like, even when you schedule it, it's like, well, when are you available? And I'll work around you. And I always found that to be something really valuable in keeping me oriented towards reality, which is none of us are important. All of us are special, and like, okay, get over yourself. And so that was really good. And I did a podcast for a while with Neil Strauss called The Truth Barrel, and I really enjoyed it. And so this is just sort of an extension of me saying, okay, I'm willing to try to have conversations with people by myself, which typically I wouldn't say happens easily for me. I do it easily, but every time I go into it, I'm always like, I hope I do a good job.
Welcome to my world. Hence, I love having a co-host. I do a lot of solo podcasting. I think I've interviewed like 130, 140 people and probably had about 15 co-hosts. Sometimes I get nervous and I need an alibi. And, but then there's someone like Alicia that always brings something great to the conversation. I have a lot of generic questions, but there's things I want to know personally, but then I have to remember I have an audience. I have to remember about what they want. How are you doing with the show?
Good. You know, the show's doing well, and I've had really incredible guests. I've had, you know, from quantum physicists to my husband, to other athletes, to actors, to the one that's out right now, I've had comedians. And here's the premise of, for me, my show, which is I think the pursuit of excellence is important. I think success is defined mm-hmm. a million different ways. People can say what I love, I'm doing something I love. For me, that's success. For other people, it's like, oh, I make a ton of money doing this, or a lot of people recognize I do it. For other people, that's success. I'm at a place in my life, and I have been around the track of like seeing a lot of people in success. So whether they're business people or athletes or whatever. And I'm sort of like, okay, that's all very interesting. How do you take this level of expertise that you have learned in this very specific way in your world? How do you now utilize that to perform better in your real and everyday life, which you can't phone in, you can't fake, and is actually in certain ways harder because you're not objective, right? Like, we're not objective about our children. And winning and losing, mm-hmm. losing is tough, but losing in a sports arena has nothing to, it doesn't even compare to when you're navigating something with your children or what have you. So where I'm at is everything derives from, I'm trying to get to understand also how people roll that to make them perform better in their humanity, in their real life, you know, as humans, as parents, as partners, as employees, as bosses, whatever. Because I think it's not that you can fake the other. I think that takes a lot of work. You probably came with some talent. You had some luck. But this is the stuff that I'm like, okay, this is the hard stuff.
Yeah. I love your guest list. And that's what, you know, it's just, one thing about the podcast world is having the right guests for the right audience and learning from them. Like, and I love your perspective. You know, some people may have lucked into it. Some people may be, you know, top of their game, but how are they handling other things as well? Alicia,
well, that's all that matters, right? Like at the end, it's like, what is it when we say champion, what does that really look like? And I have come to find out that it is not connected to $1 billion or a gold medal or the amount of people that recognize you. It is something else. And so I'd rather spend time in those conversations.
Yeah. You could write as many books as you want. You could make $1 billion. You could be on TV every day. You could be whatever. You could have 1 million Instagram followers. But really, I mean, what is your true worth if you don't have any? And one of it is self-respect. Yeah.
And I think it's also really valuable when people like that say, oh, and let me tell you in the ways in which I struggle. And I'll just tell you how I'm trying to approach it. Because I think sometimes... Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, selling perfection or selling that is, it's an unfair thing. And I think it's important when you see someone like that and you go, oh, wow, someone even like that even is still getting up each day and trying to make the best choices that they can. And that's the other thing mm-hmm. is reminding people, it doesn't just arrive at your front door. It's like you still have to get up. And even though if you know the way, you still have to decide to take those steps. And that, you know, I was talking to a writer recently and we were talking about, he's quite knowledgeable about health and wellness. And he wrote a book recently called The Wedge. It's a gentleman named Scott Carney. And he wrote a book called What Doesn't Kill Us. And I said, it's interesting because when you know all the right answers, like, oh, well, this for anti-aging and that for this and that for your mitochondria and all blah, 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 right? I'm like, you still then have to have a system in place and then you still have to have a practice. And so we sometimes think, oh, our knowledge will cover us. But the fact is like, no, you got to have a system in place so you can be successful, because that means none of us naturally are just getting it done. And then you have to practice. And so I think it's just reminding people, like, it's no different for anybody.
Yeah, it's a constant hustle, but it's, oh, sorry. Go ahead, Alicia.
No. We need paddles so we can hold up. You said two things that I thought were really extraordinary. One, I've talked about this on a podcast before, and I feel like it's certain types of people who read these same books and feel the same way. But David Goggins said, greatness is not something that you meet once and that stays with you forever. You have to be in constant pursuit of it. And this is something ever since I read it, I replay it over and over because I definitely feel this. I think coming from the military, like you said, we strive for excellence, and whether you're an athlete, there's certain people that we just have that in us, that we're striving for greatness and that excellence. And I'm an athlete myself, so I tend to draw myself towards people with that same drive and hunger and intensity, as you mentioned in your podcast and just now. And I think what you said was really remarkable about, it's great to have these one-on-one conversations because we're faced with people who are similar. We're all out there to achieve greatness. And I'm working as a consultant now for a few professional athletes. And the thing that's been the hardest to pull out of people and even to display myself is this intensity in a time where the world seems to be slowing down. And and what you said about we have to practice this, I implemented a gratitude practice that changed my life, and I practice that every day. But the hardest thing for me to practice and display has been this sense of intensity since everything's happened with the quarantine. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
It's in some ways it's both, right? It's an inappropriate time to be overly intense because we don't know how long this race is. So this might be about a level of maintenance and kind of homeostasis right now so that we can sustain it as long as we need to. And then when we know, hey, it's gearing up, we can always get that gear. We can find that gear. But this, I think that's actually a really appropriate response because then you can continue, at least in maintenance. If you just, I think it would be like running a sprinter's race, but you're in a marathon. I think it's at the inappropriate time to respond. Yeah. It would be like bringing your kids home from a birthday party. It's 9 p.m. They're exhausted. They had a bunch of chocolate cake. And now you want to discuss with them like why it's not good that they're having temper tantrums. They're tired. They need to take a shower and just go to bed. And I think right now with quarantine, it's like, oh no, we need to give ourselves a little bit of a break and know that we might need to up, you know, down gear shift and just chill, but making sure every once in a while, even if it's just an internal connection, hey, will I be able to wind up and create that depth of intensity if I need it? And am I doing the things I can to at least create that foundation that would support that gear shift when it's time?
Yeah, that's beautiful.
You know, one thing I wanted to talk about is you've, and this is going to kind of geared more towards our military audience, is you've been married for a long time and you're both world-class athletes. You both have a lot going on and you spend throughout your marriage a lot of time apart. And one thing that happens in our military community is one of the spouses gets deployed and someone's stuck home with the kids. I shouldn't say stuck home with the kids, but someone's left home with the kids. And
at times they're really stuck home with the kids.
How did you handle that? Is there any advice you would give to that spouse out there, man or woman? I've been on both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah. You know, I would never compare what Laird and I have to go through to what military couples go through because, you know, for a part, it's not actually for that long of a time. If Laird leaves to go pursue a swell, if it's arriving in Tahiti or Portugal or wherever one might be, a low pressure might be arriving. It might be a week. You know, he's a pretty focused and serious person at this. He's always been. So it's like, I'm going in for the swell and I'm coming home. So I would never have the audacity to compare what those couples go through. The only thing I could say is that, okay, people have asked me, hey, how do you feel about him riding those big waves? Well, I met him interviewing him because he was a big wave surfer. So the notion of, you knew what the job was dangerous, like when you took it, right? So typically I think people who are marrying into the military, I feel like you kind of know what they're doing. Yeah. So first it's that personal accountability. I've chosen this. This isn't happening to me. I have chosen this. Is it hard? Yes. Am I concerned about my partner who is 7,000 miles away? I am, because there's that element too, right? There's real threat. So you're dealing with that. And then you're dealing with feeling alone and being the only parent, and that element where you go, they're risking their life and this still feels unfair to me. I get that. Like, I think it's about sort of identifying all the feelings and having the right person who can talk to you and not pull you down into the hole, but go, you know what? It makes perfect sense that you would feel like it's unfair that you're an only parent and you're dealing with these kids and disciplining them. And then they call on the sat phone or the FaceTime and everybody's like, oh, hi, hi. And even though they're risking their lives, right? Everybody has their feelings. But I think clear communication with your partner, I think more, I hate to say it, I don't know. I would think more positive communication if you can, because you don't get that often or the in-depth or the everyday with them. But I think it's that reminder of, I've chosen this. And so maybe that's the time to continue to remember, why am I with this person? What are all the things that I so value and respect and love about this person? And this is the family we have created. And so now I'm going to do my part, even when it's hard. And just try to keep reinforcing or refocusing on the things of your real whys. And I don't, besides that, I would never pretend to know what that's like, because I mean, that is a very delicate and difficult situation to manage. And I give people a lot of credit.
Thank you for sharing that. And even just for your empathy and you know, your thoughts around the military community. And certainly for anyone, I think it's not easy when you're separated from your loved one or when you are feeling alone. I think you just gave, I had to write it down, some excellent advice about having that personal accountability and just coming to that realization that I chose this. So I think one of the things that feels the worst and that's the hardest for us to grasp during these times, especially with deployed partners, is feeling like you've lost control and that you, it's so uncertain and you don't know what's going on. But I love that about the personal accountability. I chose this, just gives you a sense of ownership, and then reinforcing that it's up to us to determine how we live each day and how we choose to enter the world. And so you talked about reinforcing positivity and being extra, you know, positive with those conversations. I think that's something that is an immediate fix and that we can practice right away of, I'm going to practice positive communication with my partner, my coworkers, my children today, with myself, certainly, like you said, about giving us a break. And then even leading into to self-care and this wellness space, which I think is so important. I saw you wrote about just taking this, the one first step of eliminating one bad habit. So don't feel like, okay, I'm home. You know, I saw somebody post a meme today and it was like, oh, tomorrow I'm going to go to bed early tonight. I'm going to wake up early, work out, meditate, meal prep for the week. And she's like, of course, none of that happened because I'm a trash human. And you're not a trash human. And so it's like, one, eliminate that negative self-talk, but that was so unrealistic. You just tried to change your whole life around in one day. So I would love to hear more about your thoughts on that and taking that one step. And then what is your advice for somebody who's at home who realizes they need to get healthy and has no self-care regimen, who says, how do I start this?
Well, okay. So we all actually have the information about what we should be doing. So I'll break it down. I think we first have to come. Actually, I won't break it down. I'll make an invitation. We have to first come to a place where we have to go back to a why. If you want your butt to look better, that usually only lasts a little while. If we have a bigger why, I would like to do it because for the quality of my life, I know in the long run, whatever it is, I think we have to create a bigger why. And here's what I know. And listen, talk to anyone in the military that's been hurt in a real way. It's like athletes, but, you know, times 10. You don't need to lose your health or a limb or something to go, oh, you know what? I think it's valuable. So I think it's reminding people first, besides our loved ones, the greatest thing we own is our health. And to really, I don't, you know, we always joke like your car is clean, ladies are getting their nails done, but then we eat like crap and we don't take care of ourselves. So I think we have to shift our priorities and say, wow, I am important. My health is important. It isn't about looking perfect or being perfectly, you know, weirdly fit. It's just about being healthy and having vitality, starting there. So that also means what you are watching, the words coming out of your mouth, who you're spending time with. all of this stuff impacts our health. And so start to notice, am I watching like train wreck television, or am I kibitzing with my friends and complaining about stuff beyond communication to offload difficulties? I'm all about that. What's coming out of my mouth? And then, okay, so that's one part of the practice. Then it's, I think, okay, walking, moving, we all know about exercise, back it up first. I actually think what we put into our mouths, the food, is so, so very important. Does it mean never eating something that's fun? No, but it means that we really have to, most of us have to eat less. You know, things that come in bags that are already prepared. Listen, it's a pain in the ass to cook and eat healthy. It takes a little more time. It takes creativity. However, once you get into a practice, it will get easier. But again, this goes back to, what is my value system?
Yeah.
Why would I not spend 10 more minutes to prepare food for myself and my family that was just a little bit better? So if it was me, I would first try to create an environment. We tell our kids, who are you hanging around? But also be that first. And every time you mm-hmm. want to say something negative, maybe hold it and see if it can pass the impulse, right? It's an impulse. All that is just like an impulse. It's like a flexing a muscle. And, you know, and then I think internally we feel kind of more proud of ourselves when we're not behaving like that. I think it is about incorporating some form of movement. Now, if people are just starting, then you got to mm-hmm. just start walking and moving your body, and you got to drink water. And what people don't realize, they are not sleeping. And so yeah. they have got to get to bed. And people go, yeah. well, I have stuff to do. If it can wait, most of it can wait till tomorrow. We have to get off our screens and we need to get into bed, because the only time we recover our poor bodies and brains is when we're sleeping. And guess what? People are stressed out, so they're not sleeping well. So that's where they can investigate doing a breathing practice to downregulate, go into your parasympathetic, relax. Mm-hmm. And is it easy? It isn't. Would it be easier to eat potato chips and watch like Real Housewives of some hell place? Probably, because it's like mindless, easy. I get it. I get the desire. But when we talk about it would be like loving your child or your best friend. We have to love ourselves in a way that's like, okay, you know what? This isn't going to serve me right now. And I'm not going to do this. And then if you have a good enough practice once in a while, okay, a train wreck, you want to watch something or have a little, whatever, some fun with it, that's not going to hurt you. But I think we haven't identified why it's important in the first place. And listen, it's a form of medicating and escapism. Eating that food and all of these distractions we have available is because life mm-hmm. is coming at us at a speed that is so radical. And our biological selves are living in an unnatural world. So it makes 100% sense, you know?
And drink water. I'm glad you brought that up. Hydrate. That is one thing ever. I mean, and just, I like how you said that. Just move, walk the dog, walk the kids.
You don't have to go to a gym and bang iron and like you're freaked out by all these people at this place. And it's all, by the way, if we want to know one thing good about technology, it's all there. You need some mm-hmm. ideas? Yeah. Google body weight exercises and just do the best you can. It's like, but we have to start to be aware that just because we're on all these things and all this stuff is happening, we're not actually supposed mm-hmm. to be living like this. So mm-hmm. we have to give ourselves, I don't want to say a break, but a little bit of kindness to understand why it's so hard to fight it. But then we have to figure out ways to do it.
I love that.
Oh, I'm so glad we had you on, you know, and like I said, every time I have one of the shows and Alicia's on or anybody's on, it's an always a learning thing for me. And I really appreciate it. Now, Gabby, Alicia, do we have Gabby grew up in SoCal and Virgin Islands. I don't think she could answer this question.
She's in the same boat with me. So Gabby, the last question that I always ask everyone is a question. So I grew up in Southern California, Hermosa Beach, amazing surf and volleyball, best sand on the planet, I think. And so the first time I ever had a proper bagel, it was in New York when I went to visit, and they literally sent me bags of them back. And so the question I always ask everyone is, if you were to have a bagel, how do you order it and what do you get on it? I know you are somebody who is super in the wellness space and in care. So I would even be curious to know, outside of the bagel question, what is your go-to wellness product? But if you want to answer the bagel question, it would be great too.
Well, I can answer both. You know, my mother's from Long Island and I lived in New York City when I was 18 to 22. So I would probably have a plain bagel. You know how they, I don't know if you know, like they have salted and unsalted whipped butter in New York. I would probably get the salted whipped and on an untoasted bagel, by the way, from New York. You don't toast those bagels.
I've heard that.
Yeah, you don't. It just tastes better. No, they don't need it. It's like you really, you know, they say it's the water. I don't know what it is, but it's so good. As far as like my wellness go to, you know, Laird has used this analogy a lot. He says, you know, self-care is like all the spokes in a tire, you know, I mean, in a wheel. And in a way, it, you know, they all sort of have to be at least being attended to in order for it to spin. And so, again, this is not about being skinny. This is about having a clear mind so we can respond correctly to the situations that we're all facing each day. And so if people are parents and single parents, if their partners are away, things like this, this is stressful stuff. So I just want to like remind people, the reason I have this self-care wellness practice is so I can respond better as a human being. Not because I'm still trying to hit volleyballs hard, because I'm not. I would say it goes back to the system. So find people who will help you and make you stay accountable. Write things down if people are starting out. Food journal and journal, like, are you getting it done? What did you eat? Notice if you grab something naughty, what were you experiencing? Were you stressed? Were you bored? Were you sad? Start to just become a little more aware. And this helps us because then we can navigate. We can go, oh, I understand what I'm feeling right now. So I'm going to do a substitution of the donut for my stress or sadness. I'm going to find something else. And have that friend who's like, yo, it's 8 o'clock or 8:30. Now the kids, if when we open up, they're back in school, let's go or whatever. I think for me, the go-to for me is figuring out the ways that I can be successful. Because no matter who you are, I can tell you, me personally, I don't fly out of bed today and go like, oh, I am so excited to go train and like eat kale. Like I'm not, but I know how to get it done. And so, you know, it's just reminding people like you're important. You're really important. And even if you're feeling hard, if it's feeling hard or you're feeling confused or sad, you're really important. And you're important probably to a lot of people. And so just to make sure you're taking care of yourself the best that you can.
Yeah, thanks for saying that about being important to other people, because we do touch on, we're going to wrap it up here in a second. But one thing about this show is a lot of times we touch on mental health. There's a lot of people right now who are just really struggling. A lot of people that are alone. I know so many people that are living in a studio apartment, one paycheck away from poverty.
Yeah.
And it's such a mental strain right now. So you really do need to be really practice on your mental health. And I tell people all the time, you do have a tool. Mm-hmm. You can text people, you can email them, get on social media. Social media is not the devil if you use it the right way. But just keep in contact with people, try to have some sort of social connection, FaceTime people, anything.
Yeah. I think that's really my rant.
Yeah.
That's important. You know, that is important. Like I heard Esther Perel on, Tim Ferriss, and she was saying, even if people are quarantining alone, they don't have to be lonely, that they can stay connected to the people around them. And it's also people being reminded, like, there's someone out there thinking about you, and that it may feel like we're alone, and that's okay too, but that we're not. And like you said, that Jason, just to have that practice is really good.
You know what, I do, like I said, I'm selfish when it comes to the podcast. I do as many interviews as I can. It's social interaction for me. it's besides the learning aspect of it, because, you know, all of us are going through different situations right now. So,
I have a question for you. So for someone like you, especially, because then you went into, narcotics and other things.
I didn't take narcotics, everybody.
Yeah. But that sometimes when we see not the best of human behavior, right? Like we see the other side, and you see it probably quite a bit in law enforcement, and then military has its own set of really intense things that you have to face that are heavy. I mean, heavy, heavy, heavy. Does that, it's funny because I always tell my daughters, like I have one daughter who's like intrigued by like all of how people think and like, you know, all of this stuff. And I'm like, listen, your dad and I are not idiots. We're just sort of choosing to keep focusing on the things mm-hmm. that are of people's, the strengths. I mean, humans we're kooky, you know, and we're, mm-hmm. there's a lot of, but I wonder for someone like you, if you also do these kinds of things, because it keeps your mind or in your eyes focused on all that is right about people after, you know, especially all of that you have seen.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I go on a lot of podcasts. I talk about, you know, I have a book about me. Yay. But I do go on a lot of shows, and I do tell people, I'm like, before, when I was in the Army in the 90s, I didn't know what was going on in the world. When I started working at Southwest Border, I started off as a Border Patrol agent, and then I went to work counter narcotics, and then I worked Al-Qaeda later on. But I didn't understand that there was evil in the world, like true evil, mm-hmm. Like just amazing, just how people, you can't really reform them because they lack a moral compass. When I was working dope on a Southwest Border narcotics, my wife was in law school, just about to go to the FBI Academy, and she didn't understand. She didn't understand until she started working in Philadelphia as an FBI agent that there was just bad people. Mm-hmm. And the worst thing that, and I do a lot of this just for self-help, you know, just so I can look at the positive people.
Right.
When I was working, I always tell a story about when I was working narcotics in San Diego, and I'll go off my rant here in a minute, but my brother, my oldest brother, was a top athlete, a Golden Gloves boxer, incredible person, but he got into cocaine and ephedra, and it killed his heart. So I moved him out to San Diego. While I'm working narcotics, he ends up getting hooked on crystal methamphetamine. So here I am going out against these big organizations saying, yes, I'm one of these people on the front line. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. But I eventually lose my brother to narcotics. And I always thought to myself, I'm like, if I can't save him, who can I save? So yes, that is a guilt that's always in the back of my mind. And that's kind of one of these things that drives me to find positivity in the world, to talk to different people, to have different perspectives, and be able to open. Yeah.
Don't you think too, though, like from all that you guys have seen, that you also have empathy for people too, who actually come into the world and it feels like they never had a chance?
Yes, absolutely.
Like where they come from, the parents they got, the environment, whatever went down, you just go, these individual people, and you, any of you went across and you went and you enlisted and then you served, you saw people there that it's like, they have no shot. And so I think it's that dual thing of going, hey, there's bad stuff. Then there's people who just never get a shot. So if you have at all the opportunity to try to skew the wherewithal to skew towards anything that's positive, it isn't about like, oh, it's so good. It's like we kind of need to, because it's like, you know, sort of tipping. And also lucky us that we can even contemplate that idea.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like this idea of like let's be healthy and let's be loving. It's like in a lot of places, this is a luxury conversation.
Oh, it is obvious. And I'm not gonna say obviously no, but, and that's one of the things I'm always conscious of when I do these shows, is that yes. And I feel a sense of guilt sometimes when I talk to people who are so on it successful that are out there doing it, but not everybody has that opportunity. Right. And, you know, Alicia and I both have been around the same type of people and being in law enforcement. And I did work immigration for years. If you Google my name, you'll see that there's some interesting facts about me with the whistleblowing and a bunch of other stuff. But I understand that not everybody has the opportunities. And a lot of those people we served with, especially when we were lower enlisted, didn't have any opportunity. None. The only clothes they had on their back were the ones they showed up with to in-process.
Yeah.
And some of them turned out, I'd say 99% of them turned out to be absolutely incredible soldiers.
So I guess that's another reminder for people like listening. It's like, hey, if you even have a, you know, anything positive that's been happening, it's like, let's not forget what that's still an opportunity for us, I guess is my point. You know, that's like when people ask me, they go like, also, what's your motivation? It's like, I'm very clear that I was given opportunities, and I don't wake up and like, go, yeah, now it's my right. It's like, oh, I better take care of this because not everybody gets to do that. And then, and just, you know, do the best that you can.
Well, I like that you, in the beginning, Alicia, I was going to say in the beginning, I brought up that you rebranded, but I think that's a wrong, after the conversation and after really thinking about it, I don't think you really rebranded. I just think you're really just, you're just motivated. And it's like, we're always on this quest to find that separate plane. I'm not trying to be philosophical or anything, but if you have that inside of you, you don't want to just stop at one thing. You're like, okay, I did the volleyball. I was a host. No, I want my own show. I want to do this. I want to do that. I do it all the time. When I first started doing these shows, I used to treat everybody like it was an interview and interrogation. Where were you born? What were you doing? Okay. Where were you on December 12th, 2 p.m.? And people are like, okay, that was a 20-minute interview. And it's like, okay, now I'm like, I'm relaxing. I'm like, so Gabby, appreciate you coming on today. Let's talk about your positivity. You've been married to Laird Hamilton. He is amazing. I love his body. I mean, seriously, he is, you really did.
I guess he's interrogating people, and it is really cracking me up now.
You know, my typical self is very, I should really someday do a podcast of my own, you know, talking smack and, you know, just being happy, the normal Jason.
Oh my gosh.
Gabby, I really appreciate this. I'm not going to let you go yet because Mark Pattison told me I'm supposed to say hi.
Oh, what a sweetie.
I was supposed to do his show tonight, and I had him on a few weeks ago. He's awesome.
He is.
And he's a really good guy. So yeah, he said to say hi, and he's like, yeah, I worked out with them. I'm like, cool. Good for you, Mark. I'm going to get there. Alicia, you got anything to... You got anything?
Oh, I'm just so grateful that we have this time together. I love that you are someone who appreciates the California sun and weather. And for me, the biggest takeaway was just being really a better human. And what you said about wellness is a way to be better and perform better. I think we do have a great responsibility to use our opportunity to make a difference and impact people's lives. And I think that's what it's all about. So for me, I'm really going to do some reflecting on how I can be a better human and keep making a difference. And I'm just so, so grateful that we've had this time together. So thank you.
Well, I appreciate you guys and all that you've done. And, you know, the one thing I tell one of my daughters she's 16, but she's also like a little conflicted about some stuff. And I just say, hey, listen, just try to be a lighthouse. Like, focus on making your light shine bright, because the light isn't going, oh, should I shine in the corner? Should I shine over there? It just shines. And then it gets worked out. And I think that we all have that opportunity if we're in that, you know, if we can get our mindset to that.
Absolutely. The kids are our future. I always love that. But Gabby, I really appreciate this. And Alicia, I appreciate you tons. And I'm going to end the conversation here.
All right.